It's automatically. Hopefully. Yes.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Call our guest line during the live show and talk about wine on air. Dial area code 646-727-3235. From coast to coast.
Basford, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire. New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on, and our phone lines are open. In the U.S., call 646-727-3235.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boy Flip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello de Borghese.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And yeah, that's fantastic.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Hummingbird Ridge Winery.
Toy Toy of Wine.
Fuller Vineyard.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wine.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Bebach Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
West Port Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And now, it's the show dedicated to the wine industry. Although, sometimes we do get off track.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
Belvoir Winery. I've heard voices at the winery.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
It's All About Wine. Here is your host, Ron.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Oh, lots of people are happy today.
There you go.
Man.
Well, we are starting a new state, and just to give you a comparison here, right now in Tampa, it says it's 82 degrees and 74% humidity, which it's not too bad. It's just muggy. But in Bryan, Texas, 103 degrees with a 30% humidity.
30% humidity.
Yes, when they got off the bus here, they were like, yeah, we'll take it. That's okay. So I saw that. I go, you got to be kidding me. And then tomorrow, the high is going to be like 102 with a low of 79. I mean, it's just ridiculous hot. And they are, let's see, Bryan, Texas, in case you don't know, is located about 90 miles northwest of Houston, northeast of Austin, about 90 miles also, 160 miles from San Antonio, my hometown. Thank you. You're welcome. Okay. And southeast of Waco, or some people, 90 miles southeast of Waco, or some people try to mispronounce it as Waco. Doesn't work that way. But, yeah. So, anyway, that's did I let a cat out of the bag? Well, I've been doing it on Twitter. So, yeah, tonight we're in Texas, our first time in Texas, and we actually have a guest, and Ron's got to get the show going so we can get the guest on the air and talk about his winery and resort. So take it away, Ron.
Thank you. You know, for filling us in, actually our guest is from Bryan, Texas, and so that's why Mike was filling you in and all that info there. Thank you, thank you. Texas, we're in the great state of Texas. Hopefully we'll be in the great state of Texas for a few weeks here. I usually, whenever we start a new state, fill you in on, topography and the highways and all that. I shirked my duties. I did not get that information. I will pass it on next week, though. But a few things. Texas is the fifth largest wine-producing state in the nation. I don't know who number 1, 2, 3, and 4 are. It doesn't give me. I got a little booklet here called Texas in a Bottle, Texas Wines. And it's a toast, a rising star. It talks about Texas wines. The wine industry in Texas employs more than 8,000 workers. The Texas wine industry brings in more than $1 billion to the Texas economy. So, wow. It says, though, that the overwhelming majority of Texas wine is consumed by Texans. So no wonder most people don't see it outside the state. The oldest winery in Texas by far is Valverde Winery, which is located in Del Rio. It first began operations in 1833. Qualify that, 1833, but they didn't continue operating throughout the Prohibition, whereas Brotherhood Winery in New York did. So that's why Brotherhood Winery is the oldest continuously operating winery in the country, because most of them had to close down with Prohibition. A little bit more about Texas here. I'm not going to go into details of each of these, but the Texas red varieties, what they have listed here on this book, Malbec, Tempranillo, Syrah, Sangiovese, Zinfandel, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, Pinot Noir, and Lenoir. Lenoir is described as a deep, dark red with notes of raspberry, cinnamon, cherry chocolate, clove, and brown sugar. The Texas white varietals that they listed here are Chardonnay, Blanc de Bois, Pinot Grigio, Viognier, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, Chenin Blanc, Orange Muscat, Muscat Blanc, Muscat Canelli, Gewürztraminer, and Semillon. So those are the basic grape varieties that are grown in Texas. I'm sure there are a few others staggered here and there, but they do grow all those, and our guest tonight will be talking to us about it. Interesting man, Paul. I've talked to him a couple times, and interesting man, a lot of fun. We'll have to find out some good information. The wine-growing regions of Texas, 8 federally approved viticulture areas, or AVAs, are in Texas. 85% of the wine from the viticulture area must be from grapes grown within the area's boundaries. That's a requirement from an AVA. If the wine is a varietal, 75% of that wine must be made from the designated grape variety. Okay, we mentioned that. Most people know that. The 8 AVAs in Texas. First one, the Bell Mountain viticulture area. Established in 1986, this was the first in Texas. It covers approximately 5 square miles on the south and southwestern slopes of Bell Mountain in northeast Gillespie County, which is about 15 miles north of Fredericksburg, which should possibly put it right about the area that that we're talking to tonight, from what Mike just described there, right around that area. The next one, Fredericksburg in the Texas Hill Country viticulture area, 110 square miles, make this up, which was established in 1988. This is near Fredericksburg, about 80 miles west of Austin. And this is also a small area, again, right around the area that we're talking about. The Texas Hill Country viticulture area. This is the second largest viticulture in the United States, established in 1991. It covers 15,000 square miles and contains parts of 22 counties. And this one, within this one, is the first two, the Bell Mountain and the Fredericksburg in the Texas Hill Country, is contained within the Texas Hill Country viticulture area. So you've got one inside the other there that we've mentioned before that could be possible. In Casadino Valley viticulture area, established in 1992, this area covers 50 square miles and is along the Interstate 10 in Pecos County in far western Texas. It is a reasonably small area east of Fort Stockton, but a rather small area. The Texas High Plains viticulture area, this is 12,000 square miles, and it covers much of the central western Texas panhandle. Lubbock, Texas is part of that. So that's over in the western part of Texas up toward the panhandle. It was approved in 1993. In 1999, they approved Davis Mountain AVA. This is southwest of the Anacostia Valley viticulture area. It's the last U.S. Appalachian area to be recognized in the 20th century. So in 1999, it was approved. This is located just west of Fort Davis, which is down toward the western part of Texas down just up from the first little hump down in the state of Texas. The Mesilla Valley Viticulture Area, this is located at the far western tip of the Texas border, north and west of El Paso, right at the tip. It also includes parts of New Mexico, and it's right on the border, that area there. And Texoma, the Texoma Viticulture Area, it's in north central Texas and includes Montague, Cook, Grayson, and Fannin counties. And it covers approximately 3,650 square miles on the south side of Lake Texoma and the Red River along the Texas-Oklahoma border. So those are the AVAs that are in Texas. And I believe the one we're talking to tonight is in, well, if nothing else, he's in the big AVA there in the Texas Hill Country. But he may be in one of the smaller ones there. So a little bit about Texas, like Mike pointed out, is the second biggest state behind Alaska, biggest one in the contiguous United States, and it's hot. And so we'll get Paul on the phone here, and we'll talk to him and have him tell us about Texas wines and what they're growing down there and all the good stuff we always talk about when we talk to different people. And I first talked to him about a year and a half ago. He called me for information, and I asked him if he'd be interested in being on the show. And at the time, he said he would love to. And so here it is, almost a year and a half later, we're getting him on the show, and we're going to be talking about Texas wines. And Mike is hooking him up now. We're not. All right, there we go. Got my notes out here. It's been an awkward day for me, and I haven't been on top of some of this stuff like I'm supposed to. But, you know, we've got it together here now. Excuse me. So, 184 wineries I have listed for Texas, although there are lots of repeats in here. It's amazed me how many duplicates I see on these. The Divine Wine, D-apostrophe-V-I-N-E, wine of Amarillo, Beaumont, Denton, Fort Worth, Frederickson. These are franchises, I'm finding out. And there's also some of these in Colorado and places. So I don't know if those are actually could be counted as wineries. But a lot of these are listed twice in two different locations and stuff. A lot of the Texas wineries seem to have more than one location, as does Messina Hoff Winery and Resort, which we are talking to tonight. So we'll find out more about that. I believe Paul is waiting in the wings here. He's in our blue room. We'll bring him on out. Paul, thank you for joining us tonight. We really do appreciate you taking the time out and coming on the program with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Ron.
I was telling everyone before we got you on here that we first talked a year and a half ago, and you agreed to be on the program then, and I'm glad you remembered. And we're starting our Texas programs with you. You're our first guest from Texas, so everything you tell us
that's super.
It will be brand new and interesting. So tell us about Messina Hoff. I'm sorry, I keep pronouncing that wrong. Messina Hoff Winery.
Well, Messina Hoff was born in 1977. That was the year that Meryl and I started the vineyard, and that was the year we got married too. And And so it is from my heritage in Messina, Sicily, and my wife's heritage in Hof, Germany.
Ah.
And we are here in Bryan, College Station, Texas, which is 90 miles northwest of the great city of Houston. And it's also the home of the Bush Presidential Library and Texas A&M University. And then we have a second location in the Texas Hill Country, which is in Fredericksburg, Texas, which is actually where Merrill's great-grandfather immigrated from Germany to Fredericksburg. So it was kind of a going-home thing for us to establish our second winery in Fredericksburg.
So the one in Fredericksburg is the second one. That's not your main one then?
No, the main one is in Bryan College Station. There we have facilities that can produce up to 100,000 cases a year.
Wow. So you are you one of the largest wineries in Texas?
I think we're number three.
Really?
We have everything is bigger and better in Texas. You know that.
Yeah, I'm sure we're going to be hearing a lot of that as we visit Texas here. you all opened up in 1977. Are you planted the vineyard in 77? Or
yeah, we planted in 77, and our first commercial release was 1983.
Uh-huh.
And back then, we produced our first year. We did 11, about 1,300 gallons total production. And then last year we did 100,000 cases. So we've had a wonderful opportunity to take advantage of the growth of and awareness of not only wine but Texas wine. When we started, there were three wineries. Now we have almost 300.
Wow.
In 1977, I was looking at some of the numbers. The whole state of Texas, which is bigger than the country of France, produced 12,000 gallons of wine in 1977, and last year we produced 3 million gallons of wine.
Wow. So Texas has been growing by leaps and bounds on their wine. I got a thing here from, I don't know, the Texas Department of Agriculture media kit. Interesting little booklet here, and talked about the different ones. But one of the things I was just reading before we got you on the air was the AVAs, the viticulture areas that are within Texas. There's eight of them there. And you are in, obviously, the Texas Hill Country AVA. Are you in the Fredericksburg or the Bell Mountain one, or are you just in the
Actually, yeah, Bell Mountain is really one property. We're in the Hill Country AVA, and then we're not in in our place in Bryan College Station. We are not a specific AVA. Actually, I'm one of those individuals that's opposed to doing an AVA because I believe that I've spent the last 36 years of my life trying to establish the AVA Texas.
Uh-huh.
And when you start chopping it up, you know, we have vineyards, we have 800 acres that we farm, and we're in the high plains of Texas. We're in Texoma, which is up on the Oklahoma-Texas border. We're in the Hill Country. We're in at least three of those AVAs, and I can honestly tell you that we've made wine from all of those AVAs, and every year, you know, there's good parts and bad parts of each of the AVAs, and we're trying to establish Texas as an important AVA in the nation. And last year, we received information that for the first time in history, Texas passed Oregon, and we're now the fourth largest wine producing state in the United States. So I've really been promoting Texas as an appellation, and a lot of my friends in California, you know, they've chopped that state up into so many AVAs.
Oh.
And really there's only one AVA that really garners a whole lot of extra money, and that's Napa. The rest of the guys, you know, just struggle to, you know, to create an importance unto their own. I think, you know, quality wine is the first and foremost ambition of all of us, and then the second thing is try to promote your state.
And that's very true. And, you know, when you say Napa is the most recognized one, I think people would be hard-pressed to name any more than maybe two or three of them, and Napa being one.
I completely agree with you. I worked in the California industry in the 60s, and, you know, I see these guys. A couple of things that I look at California as a leader, and yet I see things that they did that I really have tried to lead our state away from. Our Texas wine organization is united. We have wineries and growers all in one organization. We do not have big wineries, small wineries. We have all wineries and all growers in the Texas Wine and Grape Growers Association. And as a result of that, we've been able to convey the information to our legislature, and as a result, we've developed a great partnership with state government.
And, you know, we've talked to quite a few states, and that, I think, is a critical thing that we run across all the time, that if they work together, they're able to get more things done than if they just have a separate organization for each one or separate ones for different areas and things. And you find that a lot where they're divided within the state and trying to fight for a common cause, and it would seem so much, I don't know, smarter to put everything together.
Oh. And, you know. I mean, it's worked for us. I've seen other states. You know, I look at California now and I see destruction within what they're doing. I mean, their marketing practices are breaking down. The state is not working in unison with the industry. And, it, you know, I look at Virginia and I see a unified industry there, and I see tremendous support with state government, and I see New York the same way. And I just think it's very, very important as states develop into wine-producing regions that they stay unified. I think it's very, very important.
Yeah, and there's so many wineries popping up everywhere, too, that, you know, if you have a central location that you can get information within the business, it makes so much more sense.
Absolutely.
So often
right.
that you find it where a winery tries to start and they have no idea what to do. And so.
And one of the things that I did when I was president of the association here is I developed a mentoring program. And what that program was that anybody who was starting a vineyard or starting a winery could contact their member or their representative on the board of directors who has been in the industry for some years, and they would give them the time to nurture them and to mentor them. Because, you know, my philosophy was we're only as good in Texas as the worst winery in the state.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we are judged by that, you know. I mean, I'm presenting wine to national restaurant accounts, and they say, "Oh, I tasted so and so wine, and I didn't think it was very good." And I'll go, "Yeah, but not all your restaurants are very good either." You know, you know, we have to be realistic about this thing, you know. And
yeah.
You know, I've done that a couple of times, and it kind of catches the restaurant. I had one guy, he told me, he said, 25 years ago, I tasted Texas wine. I didn't think it was very good. I said, I ate at your restaurant 25 years ago, and I thought the food stunk. So, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
really.
That's
yeah.
the way it
but
is.
I think one of the things I read, too, on this little booklet here that I was passing on information before we got you on, tell a little bit about Texas. And one of the little facts here that I think – caught me by surprise, says the overwhelming majority of Texas wine is consumed by Texans, which is true. You don't see a lot of
true.
Texas wine anywhere else.
No, I mean, we ship to 32 states, but I would say 92% of all the wine that we produce is consumed right here in the state. And and we are barely touching what our potential really is. You know, we did recently with our distributor. Our distributor, you know, with great leadership, Republic National Beverage, came up with an interesting marketing concept, and that was in California, 85 to 90% of the wine sold in California comes from California. In a Washington state, over 30% of the wine consumed in Washington state is from Washington. And in Oregon, more than 15% of the wine in Oregon is consumed in Oregon, all the wine consumed is Oregon wine. When we went to Texas, even though our industry is growing as rapidly as we are only 3.2% of total wine sold in the state of Texas. So potential is unbelievable. You know, it's amazing.
Yeah, Texas wines. Tell me about Texas wines. Tell me, you know, I mean, I read through this list here, and let me, you know, just do it again, just basically to refresh the listeners and you. It says the Red Varietals, Malbec, Tempranillo, Syrah, Sangiovese, Zinfandel, Merlot, Cabernet Sauvignon, Pinot Noir, Lenoir, the White, Chardonnay, Blanc de Bois, Pinot Grigio, Viognier, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, Chenin Blanc, Orange Muscat, Muscat Blanc, Muscat Canelli, Gewürztraminer Demeanor Sauvignon. Now, these, almost all these are vinifera. Is that what Texas does?
I would say, with the exception of the eastern part of the state, which our main winery is, we produce, I would say, 90% of the production in the state of Texas is vinifera. I would say 80% of the grapes come from the High Plains of Texas, which is an interesting geographical area. It is a elevated desert out in West Texas. It's about anywhere from 3,400 to 3,700 feet of elevation on a flat plateau.
Wow.
And the weather gets very, very cool in the winter. I would say not cool, cold. And then in the summertime, it gets nice and hot. We're a little bit like Temecula. We're a little bit like Eastern Washington in the way our season is. As a matter of fact, most people, you know, when we started in this 36 years ago, we thought, well, you know, our weather is similar to Southern California because you look straight across in latitude, but it's not. It's really, you have to look at the weather pattern of the jet stream. And our weather comes out of Oregon and Washington. It sweeps through the High Plains. It goes up to Dallas, and then it heads up the East Coast towards New York. And, you know, we're influenced somewhat by the Gulf. So as a result, we're very moderate here. So that's the reason why we don't normally get spring freezes, and that's the reason why we grow Lake Emerald. We grow Blanc de Bois, a great Florida grape, both of them. And as a matter of fact, I'm sipping on some of my Lake Emerald that I produced from, you know, our grapes here in at the winery. But, you know, we produce Lenoir, which is a grape that I think would also be wonderful in Florida. My son went to Atlanta, I guess, 2-3 weeks ago, and gave a speech on Lenoir as a grape for Georgia. And I really think that the Southeast could benefit by planting Lenoir.
Lenoir, that's that L-E-N-O-I-R?
L-E-N-O-I-R. It's also called Jacques, and it's also called Black Spanish.
Black
Spanish.
It's
got a really fascinating history. Yeah, because we think that the grape is actually from the Southeast. And somehow it went to France, and they called it Lenoir. It went to Spain, and they call it Jacques. We think it went to the island of Madeira. We think that some of the wine that they were consuming during the signing of the Declaration of Independence actually had some Black Spanish in it. So it's, you know, and, you know, people ask me, you know, what's the significance of that? And I tell them, if I was signing a declaration that created treason, I think I'd be drinking heavy, too.
yeah, really, if you think about it that way. the grape itself, do you know any of the history of the Lenoir?
Well, I mean, that's the, you know, it's one of those historical things that also borders on legend. It's supposed to be from the Southeast. Maybe the Carolinas, maybe even Georgia. The settlers brought it west. The French took it back to France, and supposedly there was a little bit of hybridization because there's a little belief that there's about 5 or 10% vinifera in it. And then it went to Spain, and they modified it a little bit. You know, when you look at this Black Spanish grape and you look at a Tempranillo grape, I could see why they call it Black Spanish because, you know, the Tempranillo is the dominant grape in Spain, and this has a similar leaf pattern and a similar cluster as the Tempranillo. And here we produce port, tawny port, cream sherry. We make a beautiful rosé out of it. It is one of those grapes that flows red, so it does not... you don't have to use skin contact. When it's very ripe, and it'll get up to 32% sugar, it will produce a wonderful grape for port production.
Wow. I've never, I've heard of black Spanish, but never heard it called the Noir.
Yeah, we make our port without even the addition of brandy. We do all natural fermentation. We use a pretty common yeast that's used for stuck fermentations, K1. And it's able to take the fermentation all the way to 18 to 20%. And so we make a wonderful port wine with no skin and no brandy.
Wow, that's fascinating. That sounds interesting, too. That sounds... that sounds good. Areas that you grow your grapes, you said you have numerous different vineyard plantings. Is that because of the numerous different climates, microclimates you're getting? And are you getting that much of a difference in your final product?
Really, all of the above. One of the things that is very true about Texas is if you don't like the weather, wait a minute. We have so many different types of climate where, you know, here we're affected by the Gulf, but way out in West Texas, you know, it is dry, very little humidity, 12 inches of rainfall. Up in North Texas, they're cooler than we are down near Houston. They get about maybe close to 40 inches of rain. And we have every kind of soil you can imagine. In the hill country, it looks like Burgundy. It's limestone, and here we look a lot like Bordeaux with a lot of clay in our soil. And in North Texas, way up north, I mean, there's a red sand that they have there that's outstanding for growing grapes. So it's very, very diversified. And so people have, and that's one of the things that I've been so pleased with the state is that experimentation of grape varieties is ongoing. You know, people ask me, what's the ideal grape for Texas? And I tell them, you know, ask me again in 50 years because we don't really know yet. You know, we know some of the preliminary grapes that we've planted, you know, Cabernet, Merlot, now Tempranillo's coming on. And I've tasted Tempranillos that I think are much better than Riojas out of Texas.
Oh, really?
And, yeah, some of the Sangiovese's I think rival the Chianti's. We were in Umbria last year, and we brought back a bunch of Umbrian grapes that I think have tremendous potential.
Hmm. So you and I were talking a little bit on a week or so ago about Pierce disease. You are not affected by Pierce disease?
Well, the beauty of Lenoir and the beauty of Blanc de Bois and Lake Emerald is that they live with PD.
Right.
So they don't die of PD. So that's what
right.
we have in our vineyard here in Bryan. In far west Texas, they have found some PD in the vineyard, but it doesn't seem to have any significant impact. So
wow.
I would say the High Plains of Texas so far has been very blessed not to have any PD. In the hill country, there's been spotty reports of Pierce's disease. We get a little bit of cotton root rot also in the hill country because of our limestone soils. But, you know, it seems to be more confined to the eastern part of the state.
Hmm. Wow. There's all sorts of reasons you can think of because of that, too, and the fact that maybe they haven't moved west yet, or I don't know. That's an interesting...
Well, you know, because PD has been reported in New Mexico and Arizona, so it's been further west of that. But I think one of the reasons why we have less trouble with Pierce's disease in the western part of the state is it'll get close to zero in the winter.
Yeah, well, that'll kill
it
then.
It's cold.
Yeah.
It's really cold. And, you know, here in Bryan-College Station, our lowest temperature is probably in the, you know, maybe 20 degrees
uh-huh.
Fahrenheit. It doesn't really get nearly as cold. So maybe we're a little more susceptible.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, excuse me. Excuse me again. Pierce disease, the glassy wing sharpshooter, the carrier, will not survive those cold weathers, those cold winters. So that's probably one of the reasons why they're lucky there that they're not getting it. Excuse me. Talking about weather again here, where you are, you say, well, Mike, before you got on the program, introduced everyone to Bryan, Texas, by saying that the temperature there was 104 degrees with a humidity of, what was it, Mike, 47%? And
It wasn't 47%. I wish it was. It had to be 85 to 90%.
Really? Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we're not that different than many parts of Florida in terms of our weather. In Bryan College Station today, I think we had a high of maybe 98, but I bet our humidity was well over 80. It probably was closer to 90.
Wow. So you're obviously your summer temperatures are very hot. Your winter temperatures then stay in the mid-30s for lows, maybe dipping down below that, something like us.
Yeah, and not often. Like last year, I think we had 4 days that it dipped below 32 degrees.
Yeah, and that was about the way we are too here. We're located just north of Tampa, and so it's just about the way we are here.
We're right on the border of being able to grow lemons and oranges and things like that. I mean, we grow them here on our property, so that'll give you an idea of some of the things that that are similar to Florida.
Why don't we hear more about oranges and lemons being grown in Texas then? Obviously, it's going to be not just your Wendell pocket there, but more of the state.
Well, and mostly down in the valley. And see, one of the things that's happening down in the Rio Grande Valley is they're starting to grow a lot of grapes down there. And they're growing Blanc de Bois. They're growing Lenoir. And they're doing very, very well down there. And they're also... One of the other things that's happening in Texas is we're starting to grow a lot of olives, especially down in the valley and along the coast. We're starting to see that. Here on our property, we have about 150 olive trees. This year will be probably a pretty decent crop.
Yeah, 150 trees. Yeah, I can imagine. So you mentioned, and you hit it lightly, but the Lenoir is PD resistant?
Yeah, it lives with PD. It's one of those things that when you culture it, it has PD, but it doesn't kill it. And they're actually using the Lenoir grape to understand what genome might be impacted into the vinifera in order to make vinifera less susceptible to PD as well.
Wow. I didn't know that. Wow, that's interesting. You have all these different wines. Do you do everything right there, or do you have different facilities since you have vineyards all over the place?
Yeah, no, all the grapes are brought in refrigerated trucks to the winery here, and we process everything here. We're in the third week of harvest. We'll be harvesting this weekend, and I wanted to share with you our program here. It's a fabulous program. This Saturday and Sunday, we will have almost 400 people in the field picking and stomping like Lucy and just having a blast. I mean, it is a wonderful, wonderful way of getting people really excited about our wine industry because they get to see it. They participate. They pick it. They stomp it. They see the way a modern winery will process fruit, with the stemmer crusher and the press. And then we teach them food and wine pairing, and then have a fabulous lunch, and taste wine all day. And these guys just love it. We do that for 4 weekends, starting in the middle of July, and we end at the end of August. And then this year, we're going to be taking the program to Fredericksburg, and we're going to be having our first crush out in Fredericksburg, and we're going to be doing the same thing there. We're going to pick it, stop it, and just have a lot of fun.
Sounds fascinating. Do you? I checked into. I was going to do some grape stomping at the winery, at the Florida State Winery, and 2 or 3 years ago. And then I started checking into it, and I noticed that they have all these competitions and all these things you got to do, and all that other stuff and everything. And I thought, no, I just want people to stomp grapes just so they can get the juice between their toes. Is that what you do, or do you have the competition and all that?
Well, we have a funny competition. It's basically once we pick all the grapes, each of the people who are out in the field get to pick one cluster that they think has the most beautiful shape or unusual characteristic, and they name their grape. So, like, they'll name it, like a puppy dog, or they'll name it dinosaur, whatever. And then my wife and my daughter-in-law basically go through the clusters and find those 10 or 12 clusters that look really special. And then the 12 people come up, and then we have a talent contest. And it is absolutely a riot. People start laughing. And, you know, like last week we had a lady who was a modern dancer. And, you know, she took her cluster and she did the tango with the cluster. I mean, it was amazing. You know, it's just fun. It's just fun. And then after that, they jump in the vats and they stomp and they just have a great time. And then we show them the actual way in which we process the fruit with our stemma crusher and our presses and everything else. And then they go around the winery and they taste wine, sometimes out of the tank, sometimes out of the barrel. And we just want to give them an up close and personal experience so that now they can be really familiar with wine and feel comfortable drinking it on a regular basis.
That's a fascinating way and a great way to do it too, because you're getting your vineyard picked that way, and it's just.
People ask me, do I have a harvester? And I say, yeah, we have a harvester. It's about 2,000 volunteers that come every year.
That's fantastic. That really is. So once you pick them, and you find out how you do that. Are you using stainless steel or oak or both or plastic or what is your fermentation method?
Oh, yeah, we've got about 325,000 gallons of stainless, and then we've got, oh golly, about 800 barrels that we do our red wine aging. We have a process here called double barrel. We trademarked it. And it's basically we put the higher-end wines, the Paolos, the private reserves, in a brand-new French barrel for 1 year, and then we take it out, put it in a brand-new American oak barrel for a year, and we call that double barrel. It's a very appropriate name for a Texas winery.
I like that.
And well, we're highly recommended by NRA.
I can imagine. Anything. Well, Texas, I mean, what more can we say? Your American oak, where are you getting that?
We've been working with World Cooperage for a long time, and I really like their wood, and we're able to do aroma profiles now with them, you know, where if we want mocha or we want vanilla, you know, those kinds of higher aromas, they're able to produce those for us. And we've started using 65-gallon barrels with them for about the last 5 years, and they occupy the same cradle, and yet they're 10% more volume. So it's increased our ability to, you know, to store those barrels. I think it was an ingenious idea to be able to do that.
And not have to increase your holding or your racks or anything like that. That is a good idea. After you, how many different wines do you make each year?
First of all, I have to say, probably too many by most people's standards, but last year we made 88 different wines.
88?
Yeah, we get to work with so many fun people out here. President Bush, 41. You know, I noticed yesterday on the news that he shaved his head.
Yes,
God
he
bless
did.
Him. He came out 15 years ago, and we blended the wine together, and we make the George Bush presidential wines for the presidential library here. We also do the Nimitz Museum, which is a fabulous World War II museum in Fredericksburg. And then we do wines for the former students of Texas A&M University. And so we make a lot of different wines. And my philosophy has been, if we can show the country that Texas can produce high-quality wines in all these different varieties, that will help us long-term in the future, because of the fact that I think there are some states that have pigeonholed themselves with only one or two or three varieties, and if those varieties go out of favor, they're really putting themselves in a major problem.
Yes, but Paul, 80?
88.
80? Yeah, 88? I mean, okay. You know, if two or three of them go out of favor, I mean, you'll have to have dozens go out of favor of 88 wines. Are you the official winemaker?
Yeah, and unfortunately, one of the things that happens is that we bring a wine on, about 4 years ago, we brought Primitivo on.
Uh-huh.
And we also make Zinfandel. And if anybody tells you that Primitivo and Zinfandel are very, very close in their characteristic, I would really object to that, because they don't seem to be that close. But in any case, we brought the Primitivo on, and my goodness, it just exploded. Our sales of Primitivo normally within 4 months it sold out. And
wow.
last year we were able to produce 500 cases, and it just completely sold out quickly. So we're always looking, you know, like now this year we contracted Movedra, we contracted Trebbiano. So we're expanding the line even more. So it's an exciting time for the state.
excuse me. I'm looking at some, your red wines here, and you know, Cabernet Franc. I love Cabernet Franc, by the way. And these look like they would be fantastic. Just your descriptions and stuff. But then I've gone. You have what, four Cabernet Francs or three or four? But then Cabernet Sauvignon. You got 5 different Cabernet Sauvignons. Are they that different? I mean, do you need different ones?
Yeah, I mean, typically what we've done is either some of them are from specific vineyards, and then some of them are just stylistically different. Like we make our Barrel Reserve line, which retails between $10 and $11. It is an everyday drinking Cabernet. It's one that has maybe a year, maybe 14 months of oak. It's you know, less tannicky. Then you get our Private Reserve, which is typically an oak for 2 years, much more intense, darker color. And then Paolo is actually the best of the best of that year. So when we, like last year, we had probably 12 different lots of Cabernet Sauvignon that came in. And so what we did was we kept them separate during fermentation. And then about 3 months after the fermentation, we rank ordered them. And the Paolo is the best of that particular year.
And you are the winemaker. You actually do the blending. You actually do everything. You hold the title of winemaker.
Yes, it's myself and my son. As a matter of fact, he just got a certificate from UC Davis. So,
did he?
We have
good.
A team.
Good.
You know, I got my certificate of hard knocks, and I went to Davis back in the '60s and took short courses. But you know, our winemaking team is extremely talented.
To have so many wines and to continue putting them out like that. It's a good testament to the fact that you are very talented. There's no question of that, I would say. I'm looking at, I'm going down to these reds here. These look great. I need to make a trip to Texas and visit you. Some of these are fantastic. When you do a tasting, what you offer flights of wines, or do you offer just certain ones, certain days, or
we have a wine bar, and the wine bar offers flights. And my son, you know, has become the CEO of the company, and you know, these young, innovative ideas that come out of 31-year-old people. We started doing wine on tap, which 12 months ago I really objected to. I didn't feel as though it was something we wanted to do, and I can tell you that that was one of the best things we've done. The wine is so fresh. We do up to six wines on tap, and we do flights, individual flights. We do food and wine pairing. We have a lovely restaurant here on the property, and we have a four-diamond villa, which is just amazing. Antiques from the 1600s. And then when you go to Fredericksburg, we have a full winery, retail room, wine bar. This year we added production to the Fredericksburg operation, and there we have four cottages that are in the hill country, and just a lovely place to visit.
Well, your official title is Messina Hof Winery and Resort. So is the resort there, or is it over in Fredericksburg?
Yeah, the resort is in Bryan College Station. You know, we'll bring in, you know, we do day spa. You know, it's an indulgence. The goal that we had here is you don't have to fly to Napa. You could come here and get the Napa Valley experience right here in the state.
Aha! It's fascinating. This is great. The state of Texas, the government, federal and state, particularly the state, do they help you? Do you love them? Do you hate them? Do you want to kill them? Want to hug them? What is your attitude toward Texas government as far as wineries go?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, I think there is no state that's better to do business in than the state of Texas, period. Secondly, I think our legislators have really recognized that we're the poster child for agriculture in the state of Texas. We are by far the most productive crop that you can legally grow in the state of Texas. And they've recognized that. Our industry now has contributed probably 15,000 jobs, billions of dollars of tax available monies through commerce. You know, we're the second most toured state or location for wine in the United States. Napa is number one, and Texas is number two.
Wow.
You know, on any given Saturday, if you went to our winery in Bryan or in Fredericksburg, there would be anywhere from 200 to 400 people touring the place. And, I mean, Texans love to go on day trips, and, you know, we've got wineries all over the state. And the thing that's nice about Texas is that 85 to 90% of the state lives in Houston, Dallas, Fort Worth, San Antonio, and Austin. So we're very consolidated with very large cities, and our wineries are located near those cities.
So you've got a built-in audience then on that.
Absolutely.
We were talking about wine on tap. Just as a side note here, the Florida legislature just passed a law and became law actually the first of this month that made it legal for us to serve wine on tap and in larger barrels now as opposed to just the bottles. So we are open to be able to do that now. So,
it's smart. It is ecologically friendly to do this. There's no bottle, there's no corks. I mean, people can enjoy the wine, and you don't fill up the landfill.
Yeah, and it makes it so much easier for you to have to worry about a little keg as opposed to opening up a whole bunch of bottles which actually cuts into your inventory and cuts into your cost. So, yeah.
And the wine is always fresh.
Yeah, yeah. I did a program.
It, you know?
I mentioned and I talked about the wine on tap there and how it's exploding in different areas. But I did not mention Texas. I should have, I guess.
Well, you know, I think it's the next best thing. It's amazing. We were on the West Coast. We went to Seattle. We went to Vancouver. And every one of those West Coast cities really have wine on tap in many, many of the wineries.
Yeah, and it is big there. And I'm understanding it's starting to catch on real big in some of the East Coast cities now, New York, Baltimore, and down the East Coast, and Miami. So it's...
And it's less expensive to the consumer, and they get a great quality. I mean, people ask me, what's it like tasting wine out of the barrel? What's it like tasting wine out of the tank? Well, that's what wine on tap tastes like.
Yeah, well, there you go. That's a good analogy there.
It's completely fresh. You know, it's most of the time unfiltered. It's just perfect. It tastes the way, you know, because unfortunately, when you bottle wine, it takes about 3 months before the wine gets over the experience.
Right.
And the nice thing about putting it in a keg is that you don't have any of that, bottle shock that you have to get over.
Right. Well, I know that bottle shock. I have that with my wines almost every time, and it drives me crazy because it doesn't really present itself like it should. And you're trying to explain to people, okay, now this is going to be all right. Just don't, you know, but... Yeah, that's
right.
Good point there.
I think it's always hard to sell the future.
Yeah, it is. I was looking at your website while we were talking here, and I noticed a whole bunch of pictures. Is that you by any chance with the red beret on in all these pictures?
Yeah, that's not only me, but it's my son, it's my grandson. That's a tradition that dates back to 1800. In my family, the firstborn son has always been named Paul, so I am I'm the sixth. My son is the seventh, and our grandson now is the eighth. And and the tradition has been that the firstborn son is the winemaker, and you get the red hat. And we go through a ceremony that provides that, and our VIP club is called the Red Hat or the VIP Red Hat Club, a Red Beret, and it's a riot because we have probably close to 1,000 VIPs, and we have events at the wineries, and they come in their red berets.
All of them.
And
yeah.
It's great. It is fabulous.
Yeah, there's this one, you know, members of our family, the VIP club, all you see all the people with the berets on, the red berets on. But I looked at the picture of you, and I have to make a comparison here. That looks like me. You the gray beard, a little bit longer hair, the glasses, the build, we could be brothers.
Well, when I saw your website, that's exactly what I thought. So I think we are brothers.
We are. All right. Well, I will treasure that statement then. Thank you.
Well,
Mike, do you have any questions for Paul?
Yeah, I do have a question, and I was going to mention some other information from your website that's really amazing. You said earlier that you ship to 32 states. Is that just by choice that you made, or is that some kind of restriction by law? I mean,
well,
are there some
in those 32 states, they are favorable enough to pay the fees to do so.
Okay.
You know, because first and foremost, you have to have the state allow it. And then secondly, you have to look at the fees that they're assessing the winery to ship into the state. And and we have enough customers in that state in order to justify shipping into the state. And that's how we make that determination. We also work with Amazon.com. We also work with a few other shippers, Vino Shipper, because some of those guys have licenses in states that we can't justify it.
Oh.
Okay. Okay. So that's how you kind of get around the...
It's a wonderful way of getting the wines out because, you know, we do realize the problem of Texas consumes almost all of our wine, and we really want other people to taste our wines because they're good, and this has been an outlet to be able to do that. Our second biggest state that we ship to, number one is Texas, but number two is California.
Wow.
Wow.
How about Florida? Are we on your list? Is Florida on your list?
Yes, Florida is on the list. We can ship to Florida.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Very cool. And then finally, going to the when we give the website address, people need to go to the history page and read more about your the history and everything. And down towards the bottom, like starting around media accolades, and I'll just mention a few of these here. Bon Appetit named Messina Hof as one of the USA's finest winery experiences. The Fort Worth Star-Telegrammed named Messina Hof the winery of the decade and acknowledged Messina Hof's winning of the Blind Taste Grand Cru competition in Bordeaux, France, which is fantastic.
Yeah.
It goes on down with the Vintage House Restaurant was voted one of the three best restaurants in Texas. And there's a lot of restaurants in Texas. Tons. Let's see, what else? And the Villa Bed and Breakfast, recognized as the most romantic bed and breakfast in the USA. And what else? It's just, there's 10 romantically themed rooms furnished with European antiques. Amenities include, live-in innkeeper, fresh flowers. It's just amazing. But you have quite a bit there as far as, you know, the reputation for the winery. It's just amazing. And I just wanted to get that in there. So when we give out the website and everything, that, check out the website. It's got some great information on there and all kinds of cool things. And you do have events over there as well. You have what's coming up, or you just had this one, I guess, Chocolate Night was yesterday.
Every Wednesday is Chocolate Night.
Oh, good.
And then,
okay.
For the next two more weekends, we've got Harvest, and then we do Murder Mystery dinners and all sorts of food and wine pairings. And we're very, very active. I am a preacher, so I do weddings. At the winery, we probably do 150 weddings a year.
Wow.
At the winery, because that's what helps to contribute to our most romantic.
Oh my gosh! Wow, that's amazing. You have it's an amazing menu to list the Vintage House Restaurant. There's quite a bit there. Very, very good setup. You need to check out the website, check out this, and I just had a pop-up from, okay. there was a pop-up when I went to the website. I see. It's giving me a location between that and Fredericksburg, which I've been to as well. So, very, very nice, really interesting, and great talking to you. Really appreciate it.
Well, it's been a delight talking to you.
Your restaurant, your chef at your restaurant, he's been with you for a long time, or she?
Yeah, Chef Chris, he's actually from New England. He came down to Texas about 7 years ago, and he's been with us, and he's outstanding. He's a great chef. He really, I think he does fish better than any chef I've ever had the opportunity of tasting.
Wow.
Understands the food and wine experience. That's the thing. You know, we've had a restaurant for many, many years, and we've had a lot of great chefs. But many times the chef doesn't understand how wine needs to be paired properly with the food so that neither one of them overshadow each other. They should complement each other.
Yes. And he understands that concept. That's great. And, you know, it sounds like you have go on.
He incorporates our wine, with each meal. So that helps to bridge the food and wine experience.
Ah, yeah. That's great. It sounds like you have a phenomenal placed there. I mean, I'm definitely going to have to put on my list of go-to places when I get a chance to go to. It sounds great. I'm going to have to look at your website and maybe, you know, order a bottle or two of some of your different wines there that I was quite fascinated with, particularly Cabernet Franc, which I love Cabernet Franc. You may be hearing from me other than just on something like this, and if I'm ever down that direction, I'll definitely stop by and introduce myself. And
we would love to have you. As a matter of fact, if you show up in the retail room, they might think that I'm there.
Yes, yeah, I was going to say that. I was just going to say, come down and look at myself at you through the mirror. I mean, it's just another. Give us all the information about Messenhof Winery, Messenhof. I already say it again. Messenhof Winery, the contact, the phone numbers, addresses, Facebook, websites, everything. So if anybody wants to get in touch with you in any way, shape, or form, they are able to do that.
Well, our website is www.messinahof1f.com. And a great way to, you know, reach us is just wine, W-I-N-E, at messinahof.com. And if you want to really enjoy some of the twitting that's going on in Texas, it's hashtag TXWine. And we're very active on that Twitter site, and that's how we communicate a great deal with our customer base.
Hashtag THWine?
TXWine. Now, you could also go to hashtag MHWine, which is specifically Messinahof. TX Wine, you get to see what's happening in the whole state of Texas.
Oh, well, that sounds good. I'll have to check that out. Oh, one other thing I want to ask you, too. You mentioned the state organization for wines and growers. What is that? Do they have a website?
Yes, it's the Texas Wine and Grape Growers Association, and it's located... And who would think a better location? Grapevine, Texas.
We chuckled about that name earlier.
and Grapevine, Texas is where the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport is. So
it is
right in the middle of a city. Yeah, it is. It's an amazing city. And we have the largest wine festival, I think, in the United States. It's the second weekend in September, and this year we'll probably have close to 300,000 people attend the festival.
Wow. Held where? At the winery?
No, at Grapevine, Texas. The whole town shuts down, and the whole town is the festival.
Wow. Well, we'll have to remind people about that coming up as we get closer. Wow, that sounds great. So, Paul, thank you so much for taking time out to join us this evening. It was fascinating, interesting, and I will definitely look forward to the day when I can shake your hand.
Well, my brother, it was nice talking to you, too.
Take care now.
Thanks a lot. Take care.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye. Bye. Little ceremonial applause there.
Yeah.
Oh, that was cool. That was good.
That was nice. You know, it's funny because you were talking to him, and he says, "I'm a minister," and I thought to myself,
yep.
"Of course you are." Would we think anything? Would we not think otherwise? I mean, all the stuff he does, he's of course he's a minister.
Yeah. What else? Yep. Yeah, very, very cool website. Love the pictures, and I see the one that you're looking at. Well, there's a few of them that look, you could be spitting images of each other.
I know.
Yeah, definitely.
That's funny. That's funny. I didn't realize it, so I looked at his picture just now. I mean, I talked to him a few times, but I didn't realize it.
Right.
So I looked at those pictures, and I thought, wow, look at that. I called the engineer over, and I showed her, and she got a chuckle out of it, too.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, very, very interesting. I've been tweeting on there, and the last tweet, because he gave me TX Wine and MH Wine, so I just did the last thing, you know, visit them on the wine on the web, and gave the internet address, because I've been tweeting quite a few things about as we're talking, you know, as he's going through different things. I put little points on the Twitter account, and of course their link to the website to their website has been added to the allaboutwinebtr.com website, so right, that's on there now. So if you want to,
he's a big winery. I just wow.
Oh yeah,
88 wines. Come on.
Yeah, you scroll down to on the photo. Well, yeah, you go to Media Center, and then Media Center Experience. You go to Experience Messinahoff, and then Photos. And then go all the way down to the bottom. There's property pictures, and it's huge. There's quite a bit, and I didn't realize it was that large, but cool, very cool looking place.
It's a big place. He does a lot of wines. I was going to ask him, when do you ever get a chance to sleep?
With everything else.
All the things he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but,
that's amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a fun man. I mean, he obviously has a passion. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So, we'll be, that's something to look forward to next time going through the state. So, cool.
Going through Texas is going to have to definitely be a stop. And anyone out there driving around Texas, by all means, stop in, tell him that you heard him talking on All About Wine. So,
Did he mention, I don't think he mentioned wine trails, did he?
No, as a matter of fact.
I know he said AVAs, he's kind of opposed to that, but I didn't say anything about a wine trail.
This book here, this is the one I was, nothing about wine trails in here. It's Texas Wine, talking about Texas wine country and health benefits. It talks about a little wine trivia, point-click guide, and that's the one that's on, I'm sure, on that disc. How to taste wines, how to buy Texas wines, a quick guide to Texas wine etiquette, red varietals, white varietals, AVAs, and how to read a Texas wine label and how Texas wine is made. And that's it. Nothing at all about wine trails. That's a good point. Yeah, because what he said, close to 300 wineries in Texas now. With that many, you would think that there would be a wine trail everywhere. And they would try to promote it as much as they can. Huh. Interesting point there. Very interesting point.
Maybe the next one. Well, I pulled up Texas Hill Country Wine Trail, but it seems more like an event type of a trail. Like there's a holiday wine trail from December 6th to the 15th. Wine Lovers Trail in February. And Wine and Wildflower Trail, but it doesn't. It's like seasonal. It doesn't seem like a year round trail thing that you could visit. So maybe we'll get more information on that and see what we can come up with on that. But
once we talk in the future, we'll see. But that was fun.
Oh, here's Blue Bonnet. Okay, there are some trails here. Okay, we'll find out some because we're still in Texas. Probably next week, and whoever with that many wineries.
Yeah, we should be in Texas for a few more weeks. Yeah. I want to bring up something here, too. Thank you all, by the way, for all of you who were so interested in listening to the program about hydraulic fracking. We didn't come up with an answer or anything on it, but it was a very informative program. And, like Mike has on the opening now, we don't always stay on the subject, but we try to keep it interesting. Mike has emailed me a couple things about the hydraulic fracturing and things that are going on, and he's watched a couple of shows, and he found a contact number or email or phone and everything for a guy who has made some of these shows and is talking about this hydraulic fracturing, and he mentioned, and I think it's a good idea if we might try to get him on the show. It's not going to be really about wine, but yet it is. We'll see maybe a future episode here. We'll talk to someone who is much more knowledgeable about this hydraulic fracturing. And I tend to think that he is sort of like against it a lot. And if there's anybody out there who works for any companies or something that or any individual who is knowledgeable and wants to talk about pro hydraulic fracturing and what it can do and how it doesn't hurt anything and all that, we'll be happy to get you on the program too. And we're not going to put you on the same night so you can argue. We'll just interview you separately. But
right.
You know, if,
get both
if,
sides of the story.
Yeah, like get both sides trying, of the story. And
like we were trying to do with HR 1161.
Yeah, right.
Trying to get
and then
somebody in the distribute. No, that ain't gonna happen.
No, they're not gonna happen. So, but you know, if you're interested, we'll get you on. Just let you tell your side story. I'm not going to try to you know change your minds one way or the other. I you know, there's good and bad on it. I don't have an opinion. I'm not going to express an opinion because, hey, you know, my opinion is not that important anyway, but it's, you know, it'll let you form your own. But if anybody out there has, you know, opposing views, but I'm going to try to get hold of this. Mike mentioned it. I think it's a good idea, and we'll see if we can't pursue this because obviously a lot of people were interested in the program. We had a lot of people listen to that show on archives. And it seems to be it seems to be something people are interested in. And I don't know if it's just because of the winery influence or it's just the fact of hydraulic fracturing itself and wanting to know more about it, because it is something that you're starting to see pop up in the news and everything more and more and more. So, speaking of hydraulic fracturing, too, I don't have the article in front of me, but there was an article in the paper that an oil company that does hydraulic fracturing or fracking allowed scientists to test the water in Pennsylvania because, you know, we're hearing things where the water is being lit by matches and burning and stuff like that. And they tested the water, and this applies to vineyards too. So, because we're talking about how the grapevines go down, we'll pick up this. They're saying that the water that is affected by the chemicals and everything is a good, I don't know, a half mile from the water that people drink and that is going to be affected by any crops or anything else. It's so deep in the earth that it doesn't bleed up to the levels that people would experience or have any problems with. So, I don't know. It says the first time that a oil company has allowed scientists to come in and test it, and the scientists tested it, and they said that from what they can see, it doesn't affect the groundwater at all. So,
right. Because it's like, I think I read on the, might have been that same article, that they're drilling 8,000 or more feet down, and the actual water table is anywhere from 500 to, you know, like 1,000 feet down.
Right.
And they said that the gases and all those chemicals are not coming. But this was something that I saw in the video, and we talked about them before, was Gasland, which I did watch finally, that they are putting the the sludge, the backwash, whatever is coming back out to get that stuff back out of the ground. They're putting it in pools above ground.
Yes, they are.
And they're saying, you know, well, we're putting mesh down so it doesn't seep into the ground, but some of that stuff has to be seeping in there. So I'm wondering if that is getting into the water supply. I mean, there's so many, and I still have to watch Gasland too, because that just came out earlier this month, and so that's going to be my next day off, I guess. But see where, because it's like a follow up, because this one was done in 2010, I think so.
Yeah.
A lot has happened in 3 years, I guess, enough to make another documentary about this. And, you know, I'm going to watch it.
But the sludge ponds, though, and that's a very good point. They're saying that the sludge ponds, that the water is evaporating off and it's leaving these sludge ponds. And they're just plastic liners on them that's keeping it where it is. There's nothing more than that. And so, you know, good point there. Is that going to make a difference on that? I mean, sure, it might not be a 8,000 feet down, but, you know, when it's sitting on top of the ground, it tends to cause problems, I would think. So,
Well, I've checked out his Facebook page, and a lot of people are telling him basically that he's all wrong.
Oh, really?
Oh yeah, he's had quite a bit of backlash on his Facebook page for this, in support of the movie, and you know the movie's coming out, and it said, you know, he's had quite some negative response from some people out there. Not a lot, but you know, it's enough that, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, okay, what side, you know, you got to look at it and see what's fact and all that. And he's interviewing these people, it seems like off the cuff, you know, just at random, you know, and it seems natural enough, but you never know. But
maybe not.
Because there's a lot of people, you know, responding to his post on Facebook or in other media that's, you know, this guy's just trying to do away with the oil companies and all that kind of stuff because, you know, he's like an environmentalist, you know. There's nothing wrong with that, but I'm just saying.
No,
that,
but, yeah, some of them tend to be, you know. Overzealous, you know.
Yes.
Zealous.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Overzealous.
So,
yeah.
So, you know, we almost have a second show coming up on that, just right here.
Yeah. Really. It's something that people obviously are interested in. I mean, it just if the number of listeners to our archives is any indication, it's really.
It took off. That was a. Yeah.
You know, yeah. So I'll see if I can't get a hold of that guy. We may cut into our Texas segments here and bring him on and talk to him, and see if he's willing to come on. I mean, you know, it might be you know, he might say no, I don't want to talk to you at all. And if that's the case, okay. But you know, we'll see. You know.
Yeah. We'll see what we can do, and maybe get somebody from the opposing side because they seem to never be willing to talk their side of the story, like with the wine, like HR 1161, and we tried to, you know, hey, come on, you know, we this is a forum. There's listeners out here. We're up to what, 100,000, over 100,000 now since the beginning or something. So, you know, get your voice out there. I mean, you know, what can we do? Listen to both sides here, but you know, we get one side sometimes. Unfortunately,
and we're more than willing to talk to anyone. You know, I mean, we try not to be slanted in any way, as you know, and I don't believe we are. So hey, you know,
they don't want to try and convince anybody otherwise. So we tried. So moving along, because we only have 8 minutes left. You have a busy weekend this weekend.
I do.
Definitely. Yes. In case you didn't get the memo like I did, you're going to be quite busy Saturday and Sunday, it looks like, according to the last newsletter. And if people would just, you know, everybody listening out there, go to FloridaEstatesWines.com. I'm going to go there real quick, too, because it's go to the website. And, well, it helps if I can tell them exactly where. Look over on the far left side. Underneath the menu, you'll see sign up for our free email newsletter. And be sure to do that. Put your email address. You won't get spam. They don't sell the email information out or anything. But you will get an informative newsletter every other week. And it tells you about upcoming events. There's also a wine recipe section. Let's see. What else? And they're very good stuff. And some wine facts. And this weekend, according to the newsletter, you have Wine Fest on Saturday and wine class on Sunday. That's still going?
That's still going.
Okay, so there you go. So Saturday and Sunday, it's going to be a big time. So Saturday, that is July the 27th, 11 a.m. until 4 p.m., you're going to have live entertainment by Sam Osborne. So you're going to, you know, come out to the winery. It's family and pet friendly, and I saw a little blurb at the top. Pet friendly, vaccinated, friendly, and leashed pets are welcome. I didn't see that before.
Yeah. Well, we've had some wandering pets, and so
yes,
you know, it's just, you know, we want to be sure they're controlled. Yeah,
sure. Yeah,
and the vaccinated part was just makes sense.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So come out and enjoy. Bring your pet. Bring your family. It's great, great, great fun and great shopping for the entire family. Saturday the 27th, 11 a.m. until 4 p.m. You got a lot of vendors out this weekend. I keep going through this list. It's like a who's who of Okay, here we go. So have a glass of wine, relax, enjoy the day. And there's also wine tastings with Ron himself. That's right. It's a lot of fun. And you can also do some great shopping outside under the giant oak trees. There's a lot of unique and handmade items and some brand names you may have known for years. And Boxer and Christie, I believe they are regulars, but the Flame Rock Oil candles. Kenneth is going to return with his original art, hand-carved coin jewelry, all kinds of stuff. Raffle Rescue is going to be back again, and that's a great cause. Let's see, what else? Is it Eileen? My eyesight's bad. Glow-in-the-dark globes. Crochet yarn necklaces, wire necklaces, domino pendants, eggshell pendants, all kinds of cool stuff. Holly is going to be there with origami owl custom lockets and charms, so that's cool. Louise is going to be there with Scentsy, and it's the original wickless warmers, so go check that out as well. And it's going to be a lot of fun, so check it out. That is this Saturday, the 27th, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. at Florida State's Winery. And then, do you still have openings for a wine class on Sunday?
Yes, we do.
So there's still openings. The wine class is done indoors, I'm guessing. Last I checked, it was.
It is.
And the wine class Sunday on the 28th of July is 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., and it's fantastic. Call ahead and reserve a seat at just call Florida State's Winery, and I'll give you the number in a minute. But you're going to learn a brief history of wines, the wine grape varietals, wine grape diseases, wine glass styles. And it's raining again?
Not here.
Wow. It is pouring down right now. All the bus people have gone back in the bus. Yeah, they've kind of evacuated. Wine glass styles and uses, cork history, evolution and uses, oak aging, wine tasting and rating wines, and of course there's a great sampling of the world-class wines at Florida State's Winery. So just be sure to RSVP. The phone number to call the winery is area code 813-996-2113, and I'll give that more in the closing information, the little tape that plays automatically there. So check it out. And definitely call ahead. It's 813-996-2113. Call now. We're waiting. Okay, we're not.
Quickly, before
yep,
I picked up
sure.
a stackable. Remember we talked about the stackable, the little small one? I picked up some. They were at Target, of all places.
Target, stackable. Okay,
Target.
Somebody told us it was 7-Eleven, wasn't it?
Yeah, I picked up a stackable at Target. So
wow.
Yeah. Wanted to pass that on before I forgot it. Yeah.
Okay. I'm going to write that down because I might tweet that later. No, I don't know.
Yeah, there you go.
So is it
stackable
is it cool
at Target?
Yeah.
We haven't zipped it open yet. It's just a little zip. You zip down the side and it separates the four little glasses, and then you peel off the top of it and you have your little glass of wine.
Are they full size glasses? I mean, what does it look like?
They're 187 milliliters. So you multiply the 187 times 4, and you have yourself a 750 milliliter, which is the size
That's
of a regular wine bottle.
Oh my gosh!
So
cool. What kind of price wise are we talking? Is it?
It was compared. This was $11.99, I believe, or $10.99, $11. You know, right around that, which is the price of a bottle of wine. You know that most people get. So.
That's interesting. Okay. Very cool. Yeah, I didn't know they had them. I thought last show or show before last, we were told 7-Eleven had them.
7-Eleven, yeah.
That's awesome.
I was in Target picking up a couple of things, and there it was. And I'm going, oh, cool. They had Pinot Grigio, Chardonnay, and what they called, what was it? I can't remember. They had a special name for it, but it was a red blend. It wasn't. Yeah, it said a sweet red. So, but they had a special name for it. But that's what's the three that were available. So,
and you haven't tried it yet.
I haven't tried it yet. No, okay. I have not.
Well, next show we'll do a
next show. I will have.
We'll see how that goes.
See how it goes.
Okay. All right. So that's what's happening this weekend at Florida State's Winery, open 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. daily. So you can go there anytime, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. And we'll give you all that information in our ending that's coming up in a bit. And we will see you all on August the 1st.
August the 1st. Wow.
really pouring down right now. It's just
wow.
I think we've had enough rain. How did your lawn mowing? Oh, never mind. We won't talk about that right now.
Lawn mowing today. I got rained on a little bit. Had to quit once, but then it stopped, and I was okay. So.
I know you were saying you were asking for pontoons so you could mow the grass,
yeah.
But yeah,
it was wet. Yeah, it was wet.
So you're going to have a porch and a dock at Florida State's winery now.
That's right. It's almost to that point. It's unbelievable how much water is up.
Yep.
Yeah.
Follow the creek and you'll be all set. Oh, we're in overtime. I'm sorry. Went a little long. Okay. Well, crud. So if you're listening to the archives, hopefully you'll get the information now about Florida State's winery. There we go. So let's go ahead and close the show. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you all on next Thursday, August the 1st at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time for All About Wine. And
thank you all for listening.
Have a good rest of the week. And everybody, I think that's the same one. Yeah.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show. And thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.